I'm drinking a whole lot of bourbon.
I'm drinking a warm apple cider.
Alcoholic?
No.
Strange choice. Oh, you mean like hot apple cider?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think I meant, like,
I thought you just
sriracha?
Meant, like, you fucking left one out on the shelf for a while, and like, you're like, oh, here's an apple cider.
Oh. No. Yeah, really, I actually just threw a bunch of apples out on the radiator and then squeezed them into a cup.
Welcome to Dynasty's Child.
We're not recording.
We are recording.
Oh, well.
Hosted by Patrick Magnus.
Look at yourself in the mirror, you're a goddamn mess.
Featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Cut everything after he praised me.
And featuring Jake Devereaux.
He wants everybody to know that he has a very impressive package.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yep, why don't you try that one more time.
Brought to you by the Dynasty Guru.
What's a good launch angle?
What's a good launch angle?
What's a good launch angle?
Yeah, what's a good launch angle?
What's up, nerds? Welcome to Dynasty's Child, your flagship fantasy baseball podcast presented by the Dynasty Guru with a focus on Dynasty formats. I am your host, Keaton DeRocher, because Patrick is lost in Japan and potentially locked in a bathroom. We have sent the authorities out to look for him, so I'm sure he'll be back for the next one. I feel confident he'll find his way home. So, with me, my fellow podcaster and baseball writer, Jake Devereaux. How you doing, Jake?
Doing well. I'm just concerned about Patrick. I know that he's going to shoot a Suntory ad, and he's going to be locked in the hotel for the better part of a week, and I'm just hoping that he meets somebody interesting and that, you know, they can have some unexpected shenanigans for a week, and then he goes home and realizes how much he loves his family, or
that
not.
Sounds like the perfect week for Patrick. Today, we are going to go over transactions, notable happenings amongst the spring training games, and then we are going to do our bold prediction show. All caps, rage, italics, bold underline, bright red font, bold predictions. First, some hitters, some pitchers, some prospects, and then we'll get into our division winners and wild cards and World Series and awards. And then we didn't have any listener questions because we forgot to ask, so that's probably how we'll end it. And then I know you guys are on your toes waiting for the top pod segment to come back. And I would guess the way we're trending, it'll either be the next pod or the one after it. And then we can start building that off-season pod spec bracket up again. So looking forward to that. Jumping into off-season happenings. Some transactions. Martin Maldonado signed with Kansas City. Jake, does that mean anything to you?
Not so much, no. Maldonado is a pretty bad offensive player, so unless you're in an extremely deep league, like we're talking 24 to 30 teams and really hard up for catching, you're not looking at this guy. Just pull up his Fangraphs page, look at his past work, and be close to a bucket so you can throw up into it. he's just a stopgap for Sal, and they just didn't want to go out and, you know, sign anybody or trade for anybody expensive or push anybody along who's not ready. And Maldonado is a great defensive guy and handles the staff well. So you know, all their young pitchers can take a step forward with a guy like this. It's just, you're not going to expect anything from him from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, I was really hoping that they were just going to let MJ Melendez break camp with him. And, I mean, they're not going anywhere, so I feel like what would it have hurt? And I guess there's still potential that he'll relatively soon be up and catching for the Royals, but would have been nice to see right out of the gate.
Yeah, you're going to let him marinate like a chicken breast.
For 2 weeks, and then flip him over, and then put him back in, so we get a nice full cook. I think that's how cooking works.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that, anyhow.
Yeah. Another more notable signing, Adam Jones, finally ended his, not really his holdout, finally signed. He signed a deal with a team. He will be playing for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I kind of like this one. Seems like a pretty good fit for him, actually, and I think he's been pretty consistent at the plate for quite some time now, and I think there's no reason to think that it's not going to continue, particularly in Arizona. So if he's getting regular at-bats, he's probably a pretty solid outfield three option for your teams.
Yeah, he could be. The real question, I think, comes down to those at-bats that you were talking about, because projections are kind of all over the place for how much he's actually going to play. I know Roster Resource is currently projecting that outfield to be Peralta, Ketel Marte, and Steven Souza, but one of the big knocks on Souza has been his durability. Marte might be platooned a little bit too, and David Peralta is definitely going to play every day, or as much as he possibly can. Jones has been really good over his career at being very durable, though, so I have a feeling that he's going to end up getting some at-bats, but I'm not sure if he's going to get his typical amount of at-bats, in which case his value would take a big hit to me, because he's kind of a collector, you know, he's not a great ratios guy in any certain aspect, so I'm a little apprehensive about that situation, but, you know, with where Adam Jones is being drafted and valued in leagues, it's probably you know, not going to affect his value too much. It's already pretty low.
Yeah. I have him as my fourth outfield in one of my leagues, and that feels pretty safe there. But I think if he does get consistent at-bats, then that could pump him up to an outfield three just because of Arizona plays well. So, but you're right. That's big if on when or if he's going to get the at-bats consistently.
You think he gets over or under 400 at-bats?
Oh, man. That was a pretty good line. I'll take slightly over. 425?
Yeah, I was going to say like 450. So I think he'll end up being a good enough play, but like that's a far cry from 550 to 600. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just something you're going to have to bake into his value.
Moving on to a major rumor of a signing. The White Sox apparently extended an offer to Eloy, or are planning to, of an 8-year, $100 million deal that would effectively buy him out of 1 year of free agency. I think this would be smart for him to take, or not so smart for him to take.
I think it'd be great. If I'm him, I'd do this. You know, you just never know what's going to happen with health and everything. And talent-wise, I mean, this is a guy who should, by all means, be betting on himself. But, you know, if you look at the amount of team control that he has in what they'd actually be buying out, it's not that many extra years, like you were saying, and this gives him financial security for, you know, his entire life. So I think it's hard to ask anybody not to take that type of deal, and I'd be kind of shocked if he didn't.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, because thinking about it year by year and kind of how the arbitration system works, he'll have 3 years of making less than $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 years of he'll probably be at like 2 to 3. Then, I mean, 10 and if he really hits it out of the park, and then may have a final year of like 20 to 25. So this deal effectively would be paying him about twice as much as he would earn going through the arbitration process.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why Chicago wants to do this, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we're so used to teams doing what's in their best interest. When we saw something like this that's actually in the player's interest, we're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I just wonder, like, if I'm missing something, you know, like, whether I am even understanding this correctly, because it seems like those team control years before a player even reaches arbitration are what all teams seek. So why choose to pay this man before you have to?
Yeah, and even let's say he ends up being one of the best players in the game and follows the track of like Mookie. Mookie made $10 million last year. He's making, well, yeah, making 20 and a half this season. And he has one more year of arbitration left, which will, I don't know, we'll just peg it at like 35. Well, so if Mookie's been a top three player in the league, was the MVP last season, and through his arbitration process is making about 60 to 70, this is pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely more than he would make going the traditional route. So, Eloy, sign this thing. Open a bank account.
Yeah. We had the first major league suspension of the season, I believe.
Second. Steven Wright.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. We don't really need to talk about that one. But Francis Martes of the Houston Astros. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery last season, and now he'll be out, suspended 80 games for a PED violation. That's kind of a bummer. He has been a guy that people have been waiting to break through to the majors here relatively quickly, and probably thought he would have already been here by now. But he racks up a bunch of strikeouts when he's healthy, but it'll be interesting to see what the Astros do with him when he comes back. But do you think this really messes with his value significantly?
I don't know if it does, really. This is sort of one of those years where the first year back from TJ is always kind of like a feeler year and kind of a building back year. So I wasn't really expecting much from him this year anyway. I was kind of looking at it as a year to get no bad news, you know, so see him work on pitches, start feeling like himself again, and then next year is the year that I would start to look at. So, you know, obviously it's a bad look and everything, but I don't think that it drastically changes the way that I'm going to value him in leagues. I do own him in a bunch of deeper leagues, and I'm still just going to keep and stash the guy because he has an electric fastball, exceptional curveball, solid changeup, and pretty good command. So there's still all of the things that make a good pitcher, but that being said, there's just no guarantee that he's going to come back and be that guy post-Tommy John. So we just need to see what the stuff looks like. But let's just put it this way. If by the time he comes back from the suspension, the stuff is close to what it was velocity-wise, and the breaking stuff, even if he doesn't have feel for it, kind of resembles what it was before, then I'm 100% on board with this guy. You just got to see if the velo comes back, because sometimes it never does.
Yeah, good point. Moving on to some injuries. The Tigers shut down Michael Fulmer, whose velocity had been down quite a bit. He was topping out at 89 to 90 pretty consistently throughout the spring, and this makes sense. Just shut down. And not sure how long it'll take to build back up. Well, that is not all that promising. That's kind of a bummer for one of the, you know, he almost won a Cy Young a couple of years ago. Still one of the young pitchers to watch in the American League and Now maybe watch him a little bit more closely to see how he's going to come back from this injury. What are your thoughts on that?
He was a guy that had been sliding in my mind for the better part of the last, I don't know, I want to say like a year and a half anyhow. I don't think his performance in that first year where he really looked exceptional was super indicative of the type of pitcher that he was. I think he was closer to a, you know, slightly above league average type pitcher. And he certainly hasn't looked great. And I think that the Tigers really missed a big opportunity to sell high on him. When he was a prospect, I think we all thought he was going to be solid, but I think he outperformed expectations a little bit. And with the injury stuff and, you know, some red flags in his profile, I mean, he doesn't strike out the most guys in the world. His K minus walk rate isn't always the best. And I think that the skill set leaves a little bit to be desired, and I certainly don't think that he should be valued anywhere like a young ace or anything like that. I think he's a true mid-rotation guy when everything's right. So if you have people in your league that are still valuing Michael Fulmer for what he was in that one great season, you know, please shop him. But if not, I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to, you know, part ways with this guy. Really, I'm pretty low on him.
Yeah, I would say it sounds like it. I am. I wouldn't say I'm super high on him, but I've had higher expectations for him that he has failed to live up to. I expected a regression from that stellar season, which just seemed natural that wasn't going to be what he was going to be consistently putting out. But I still thought he was going to be an effective pitcher. And obviously he has not been, which has been disappointing. But this is just kind of a, this might be the last nail in the coffin for me. I picked him in the Dynasty's Child Listeners League, and I thought I got him at a pretty good round. But I may not want to hold on to him much longer after this. Because I think I actually put this in our Slack channel about a week ago, that his velocity was super down, and that was concerning. And then he was shut down, which just kind of makes sense. So I guess I'll probably end up giving him another shot and see what happens when he comes back from this, whether he just takes significant time off to ramp back up or if he ends up getting some form of surgery. We'll have to wait and see. But I still have hope that he can be an effective pitcher, as slim a hope as that is. So
I like your optimism, Keats. I just don't like his K rate.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. Kyle Seager, we talked about him on the previous pod, although at the time we expected him to just be out maybe a month or so. Now it's looking like June at the earliest. That's not great. This is probably another guy that you're comfortable just letting go, right?
Yeah, see you later. With that much time off, you got to drop him, unless you can stash him all year and have it not be too painful to your roster construction. I think you just don't worry about him at this point. He's been a little bit on the backslide recently, so
yeah.
Just you know, in those type of injuries can really linger for hitters even when they come back. So you never know.
Yep, I agree. And then some last couple pitchers here that got shut down: Andrew Heaney got shut down, and Dane Dunning got shut down.
That's your boy, Dane.
I know. That when that one came across, that one hit me. Yeah. I was bummed.
I'm actually bummed about Haney. I mean, like, obviously Dane's disappointing too, but Haney looked really good last year for stretches. So it sucks that he can't stay healthy.
Yep. It just seems to be something with the Angels. It's funny too, because they didn't re-sign Garrett Richards. They let him walk. Now he's in San Diego. And they replaced him with Matt Harvey.
Right.
So they just can't get away from pitchers that are injury prone. And they can't keep the ones that they have healthy, which is a bummer, because you're right. Even beyond last year, the last few years, he's shown flashes of his ability to pitch and pitch effectively. But it's just for like 40 innings a year is probably what you can count on him for, if that.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate because, like you said, I mean, last year, 180 innings of pretty good baseball. And I was kind of looking for him to take that jump this year.
Yeah, that was a strong candidate. Dunning, at least he has age on his side.
Yeah, but and Haney's only 28, too. So, like, you know, it's not like this is the nail in his coffin either.
No. And the White Sox did give an update on him today, and they're still not sure if he will require Tommy John surgery, which whenever they're not sure, it just feels like they're wasting time that could be spent recovering, and they should just do it.
Yeah. I guess that, you know, it's a different case for everybody, and some people are able to avoid it fine and, you know, pitch effectively, like Tanaka, and some are not. So just, I don't know. It's totally dependent on the case. Maybe we should get Mike in here to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? I'd be curious to see why some pitchers elect to do, what was it, PRP injections? Or what? It was the, I think Skaggs and Garrett Richards both got it. Or not, actually, Heaney might have gotten it too. Instead of a Tommy John surgery. And obviously it didn't work out for Richards. And it may also not work out for Heaney.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Mike is going to tell us that it all depends on what the MRI shows and how intense a tear that is, how complete of a tear it is of that ligament. So I think if they're showing just a minor tear, it might be something that they hope that the PRP can treat and heal. And if it's a substantial tear, that seems like it's going to go or not respond to that type of treatment, they probably just opt for the knife.
Yeah, that makes sense. I buy it. Now it's time for some hot shots. Our bold size 48 fancy, I couldn't think of, Verdana font. Bold predictions. So we will each pick a pitcher, batter, and prospect. Or we'll go through pitchers, batters, prospects, and we will give a bold prediction on someone that we think is going to fail miserably or be very successful. So I like your pitcher prediction here, so let's start with you.
All right. So my bold prediction is actually for an entire staff. A staff which, spoiler alert, I think is going to be a division-winning staff. I don't believe that a single Dodgers pitcher will finish with over 130 innings pitched this year. And let me tell you why. Here are the names. Hyunjin Ryu, Kenta Maeda, Rich Hill, Ross Stripling, Walker Buehler. And then if you go down and take a little gander at their depth chart here, Clayton Kershaw, who's dealing with some injury situations right now, Julio Urias, Dennis Santana, these are guys who are on the 40-man roster who are actively pitching right now. And all of these guys have had injury or durability concerns. And I think that the thing that's always impressive about the Dodgers, and I know Patrick loves this about them, is just the ridiculous depth. It seems like every time someone goes down, they have somebody who can come up and fill in, not just fill in, but fill in at nearly the same level as the guy who they just replaced. So I think that they'll continue to have one of the better staffs in all of baseball. I just think they're going to do it in sort of the most non-traditional way possible. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm trying not to own as many Dodger pitchers this year as I have in some years past, because I do share that belief. The other thing here is that, like, four of those pitchers that I mentioned are over the age of 30, and Rich Hill is damn near 40. So it's an interesting mix of older, injury prone, or super young in the case of Walker Buehler, and throws a million miles an hour.
So of all those names, which one do you think has the best shot at getting 130 plus?
This is probably going to shock you, but Kenta Maeda.
That does shock me.
Yeah. So Maeda, I think, could have been able to do that the last couple of years had they just let the man stay in the rotation. And I think that out of pure necessity, they might do that this year. And he could be the guy. But I'm just betting against it as a unit right now.
Yeah, I like that one. It's an interesting one. To me, I think Bueller has the best chance. But it's not a great chance. I don't feel real comfortable taking him. But to me, he just stands out as someone that is going to be able to get there. So we'll see.
Who's your guy, Keats?
Yeah, my pitcher is Tyler Skaggs. Last year, Skaggs had one of the better first halves in all of baseball, where he had pitched to a 2.57 ERA, 1.2 WHIP, and an All-Star nod. And then he got hurt, tried to pitch through it, and that didn't work at all. And he ended the second half with a 9.22 ERA through 27 and a third innings. Now, we just talked about how Angels pitchers are always hurt. Maybe it's a stretch thinking that Skaggs is going to be able to put a full season together, but he really was one of the better pitchers in the American League in the first half and looked like he was putting together the ace potential that he came up through the minors with until he got hurt again. So barring, I guess, a major setback, I think that he has figured out how to pitch at the major league level and is going to put together another successful year.
I love that call. I love Skaggs. He's so unique. He's just got those big loopy breaking pitches and doesn't overwhelm you with velocity, but really looks good out there. So he's one of my favorites, and I've actually been drafting him quite a bit this year. So I agree with that. He's a guy to look out for sure. I wanted to ask you, Keats, as a follow-up to the Dodgers prediction, do you know how many Dodgers broke 130 innings pitched last year?
Oh, boy. Feels like it's going to be low, but one? Is it one?
It's shockingly more than one.
Huh.
It is four. Clayton Kershaw had 161. Alex Wood, who's no longer with the team, had 151. Walker Buehler barely did it, 137.1. And Rich Hill squeaked by with 132.2.
Wow.
Yeah. Four guys.
Yeah. That's a lot more than I thought. I guess 130 feels like that should be pretty attainable for just about anybody, but who's actually, like, you know, there for the start of the season.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm really doing is betting against Rich Hill, Walker Buehler, and Clayton Kershaw's health.
That's not a bad bet.
Yeah.
I would say history's on your side.
Yeah.
So who are your batters or better?
Okay, so I couldn't choose between two. So I'm going to give you one surface one and one that's a little bit deeper here. Both are DH first base types. My first hot shot is I think that Miguel Cabrera is going to rebound in a big way this year. I think I've talked about this on this podcast at some other point that I was sort of a believer. And one of the big reasons why with Miggy is just that last year in a limited sample, his exit velo was 94.4 miles an hour. He was still hitting the ball super hard even when he was injured. The launch angle suffered a lot, but just to put that in perspective, that would have been one of the better exit velocities in the entire league. Would have been top 1 percentile of the league, essentially. And his hard hit rate was higher than it was in some of his better seasons. So he was still whacking the ball. And I think that if he actually has dealt with his health injuries, there are a few people in the game that can hit like Miggy. So I think you could get him at a huge value. But the other guy is Tyler White, who's actually going to get more playing time this year than he ever has. Last year, he only played in 66 games for the Astros. But he figures to get a lot more opportunity this year playing DH, maybe sliding to first every once in a while. But what I like about him is that he's able to hit the ball with authority without striking out a ton and having a pretty good profile. So in those 66 games last year, he walked 10% of the time, struck out only about 20 0.7% of the time with a 257 ISO. It was good for a 144 WRC plus, and projections like him to be quite a bit better than league average this year, with anywhere between a 113 to a 123 WRC plus, depending on which projections you look at. And so if you figure that this guy is going to get, you know, 120 to 140 games, which should average out to 500 to 550 plate appearances, I think that's a guy who could run into 30 home runs and, you know, 90 plus RBIs with a pretty respectable average in OBP. And to me, that's probably a top 10 option at first base if he can do that. And I just don't think he's being drafted quite like that. I was able to get him very late in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. He doesn't hit the ball on the ground very much. He gets it in the air 42.6% of the time. There's just a lot of things to like about what he was able to do last year. So the velos aren't super impressive for him, the exit velos, but I just I believe in the skills as a pure hitter, and I think that the power is real as well.
That's a good call. I like the Tyler White side of that. I'm not a full believer in Miguel Cabrera. I know he's really good, but for the past few seasons, it seems like he's really been only contributing in average or OBP, hasn't been doing much else. So I hope you're right, because I don't think there's anybody out there that hates Miguel Cabrera. I want to see him succeed, but it's tough to believe in now. But I think I'm completely buying into Tyler White having a solid breakout year. That's great points. I'm on board with you there. My guy that I'm going with to have a breakout season for a hitter is Harrison Bader. So Harrison Bader, he played in 138 games last season, but he only started 97. So his at-bats were pretty low, considering the number of games that he played. He didn't even get over 400. He's at 370, 380. So he is right now projected to be the everyday center fielder, or at least start the season as the everyday center fielder and get a full season of at-bats. And that is exciting because he's a guy that could easily be a 2020 guy in center field. His strikeouts are a little elevated for someone who runs and makes as much contact as he does. But I think it was at 29.3% last season. But his quality of contact was really good. And he put together above major league average in barrel percent and hard hit rate, which is great. So when he's making contact, he's making great contact. Now, with coming into what would be his first full season and having played pretty extensively at the major league last year, I think it's safe to bet on the K rate coming back down to something a little bit more reasonable, like 25-24%. Resulting in a lot more balls put in play, and he can go 20 homers, 20 steals, and be pretty exciting for the Cardinals. His average throughout the minors was consistently between like 280, 295, and his average at the major league level last year was his best of his two seasons he's played for the Cardinals at 264. But I think if he's not striking out as much, putting more balls in play, we expect that to come up again to like 280. So a guy that's going to hit 280, hit 20 homers, 20-plus homers, steal 20-plus bags, that's an exciting fantasy player, filling up the box score. So I think this is the year that he's going to put it together, and he's going to be that, you know, 4 or 5 category contributor.
I like the starter set of tools there with Bader, and I love the defense, and I think that's going to give him a lot of opportunity to play. The one concern that I have with him is his platoon against righties last year was not so hot. He had a 138 WRC plus versus lefties and just 90 versus righties. And as we know, there's a lot more righties than there are lefties out there. So hopefully he can take a step forward against right-handed pitching and, you know, maintain his approach and not start expanding the zone. Because I think one of the things that happens with younger guys that end up getting jobs like this, especially for a higher profile team. If they start going bad, they can start expanding the zone a little bit and get into some nasty slumps. So I wouldn't be shocked if he struggled this year, but I do like the player long term from a dynasty perspective. I guess I'm just not as sold that he's going to be able to do it this season, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean,
but I like him.
There are things in his profile last year that are trending in the right direction, but there's also things that are not. So to continue to trend the things that are going well and turn around the things that were going bad in one season is aggressive. So maybe I'm just buying into the Cardinals devil magic a bit too much with him.
I mean, but you're not wrong. Cardinals seem to figure out how to get just about anybody to be a 280 hitter, so why not him?
Yeah, why not him? So who do you have for your prospects?
All right, again, I was split. I'm going to give you my quick hit guy, and then I'm going to give you my deeper dive guy. So my bold call, one of them is with a catching prospect, which I know that you and Patrick are going to appreciate there, but my bold call is that Andrew Knizner is going to end up being the more valuable long-term dynasty catching prospect than Keibert Ruiz is. I think that Ruiz is ultimately going to move off of catcher, and I think that he's going to end up being like an average-ish bat somewhere else in the field. And I think that Knizner is going to continue to hit when he gets up to the pro level. I don't think that Yadi has that many years left of fully healthy baseball. He's coming off of a knee injury, a knee surgery this offseason. And I think that Knizner's going to be the guy who ends up being just like a solid top seven catcher in fantasy leagues as soon as maybe next year. So I think the long-term job in LA goes to Will Smith eventually. But my deeper one here, my bigger prediction is on a guy who I am just, he's my big prospect crush right now, and that's George Valera. He's 18 years old. He's a lefty bat, 5'10", 160 for the Indians. Only played in six games last year after being a J2 guy in 2017. The reason why, he broke his hamate bone in his hand, but in those six games that he played, he only struck out 13.6% of the time, walked the exact same amount, and just really hit the ball pretty hard. And guys that have had eyes on him just say that the swing is pretty special with Valera, and they can see the potential for a Kyle Tucker-type player there. And anytime you can throw, you know, a comp of one of the better prospects in baseball and a guy whose swing was compared to Ted Williams, ridiculously enough, it's a good thing. And the Indians have done an exceptional job at developing young position players over the last few years, and they always seem to kind of become better than we think they're going to be. So if that fact remains true with Valera, you can really dream on him to be not just like a good Indians prospect, but a top 10 prospect in all of baseball. And I think that that could happen by this time next year with him. So he's someone that I am going after in all my leagues. And in Jesse's 2019 fantasy outfield prospects list, he was ranked as Jesse's 48th best outfield prospect. And I think that that is just silly low for a guy who has this type of skill set.
Yeah, I completely agree. And a couple pods ago, I waxed my poetic about George Valera and how excited I was about him. So I think we're completely, both of us are totally on board that he is going to be a guy to really just come out of the gate strong and put on a show this year. And I completely agree with you that 48 is just way too low.
Put him in the top 10 now.
Yeah, I like it. So the prospect that I went with is Hans Kruse, a 20-year-old prospect for the Texas Rangers pitcher. If he's not on your radar, or hasn't been. He should be. He has 270 grade pitches. MLB put a 70 on his fastball, and Fangraphs put a 70 on his breaking ball. And both of them actually had his command pretty decent for a 20-year-old, which is probably why he's had a pretty effective pro debut so far. He's only pitched about 50 innings or so, 60 innings or so, in pro ball between 2017 and last year. But what he has done with those innings has been incredibly impressive, getting a ton of strikeouts, K per 9 up over 10 into the 11s. Walks per 9 has been below 3, which is right where you want to see it for a starter. And just the raw stuff that he's coming at these batters with, it's pretty impressive for a 20-year-old. So I look for him. He reached full A last season and only really had like a couple starts there. So he's probably going to end up back there again. But it wouldn't shock me if he's pitched maybe 50 or so innings at double A by the end of the year with the stuff that he has. And he hasn't really been high on some prospect lists. But I think that's going to change this year. I think he's going to shoot up and probably be on the top half of a lot of people's top 100s by the end of the season. So I'm fully buying into a breakout from Hans Cruz.
Yeah. I mean, for a guy like this, obviously I'm on board. I just drafted him in our listener league that we play in, and shout out to all the listeners who are in that league right now and are listening to the podcast. I believe in the stuff, like you said. The fastball curveball combo is just fantastic. One thing that is worth mentioning with Hans here is that he's got a pretty nasty head whack when he pitches, and as a result, the command can really slip at times. And I worry about that as he advances, and hopefully that's something that can get ironed out while he's in the minor leagues and clean up that delivery a little bit. Give him a little bit more consistency with that. And I think if he can get a more repeatable delivery with, you know, a little less movement there, he could really be someone that shoots up. If he can't get that cleaned up, though, this is a guy who could struggle at the upper minors and just really not make it, certainly not as a starter. You'd be looking at a reliever profile if he can't get that stuff ironed out. And the one knock against him is that, you know, he's a Texas pitcher. And Texas just hasn't been great at developing arms recently. So you're taking a gamble on him if you draft him. But, I mean, I don't know how you can't draft the stuff right now with with how it is. So I'm with you, man. I'm in love with the stuff. So hopefully they can get that stuff figured out.
Moving on to our division and awards predictions. Let's start with the AL first. So I'll run through mine. AL East, I have Boston as the winner. AL Central, I have Cleveland. AL West, I have Houston. And for the wild cards, I've got New York and Oakland, which is the exact same teams as last year, which is boring. But I honestly don't see anything that's going to shake that up. Maybe Tampa Bay can sneak their way into a wild card, but I like Oakland. I like Oakland there.
I have the exact same teams as you. the AL is boring in terms of just who's good and who's not. It's just really friggin' hard to pick against Oakland for that last wild card spot right now. I really thought about the Angels. I put some time into thinking about the Rays, but I just think that it's got to be Oakland again. So
yeah, that's really the only position that's up for grabs, right, is the second wild card, because Boston and New York are going to be two of the best teams in the league again. No one is challenging Cleveland, and the Astros just seem to get better every year. So that has to be the only one that really – I expect those four to be locks, but – and maybe – yeah, I think Tampa Bay might be the only one I can challenge for that second wild card spot, but I think, yeah, like you said, I think it's going to be Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just comes down to, like, do you think the Twins can can make a run at that. And, you know, possibly if Cleveland runs into some injuries, I guess there's some semblance of a possibility. But I just, man, the AL is locked up right now.
Yep. So moving on to the National League, I've got Washington winning the East, Milwaukee winning the Central, LA winning the West, and then my wild cards, both from the NL East, Atlanta and Philly. Who do you got?
I have Washington in the National League East. I have Milwaukee in the NL Central. I have the Dodgers in the NL West, and my wild cards are the New York Mets and the Cincinnati Reds, two of the most active teams in free agency and the trade market this past offseason. And you're probably wondering, how the hell can Jake pick the Mets after winning only 77 games last year? But let me tell you, Brandon Nimmo, I like him being in the lineup all year. Jeff McNeil broke out. I love the addition of Robinson Cano, Wilson Ramos. A healthy Michael Conforto would be great. Add in Peter Alonso to the mix. Another year of maturation from Ahmed Rosario. And then, man, the pitching. Jacob DeGrom, Syndergaard, Wheeler. I mean, that is good. And then if you factor in the back end, that bullpen with Edwin Diaz, Juris Familia, that's going to be a nice team. And with the Mets, like, they had the talent last year. It was just a matter of what it always is with the Mets. Mets injuries. And I think that they could really have a special year this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I don't disagree with anything you said. It's just the, I guess the 1 year they were healthy, they did go to the World Series, but they haven't been able to put a healthy season together since. So it's hard to believe it's going to happen again. But
yeah,
you're absolutely right. If they are healthy, they're going to win a heck of a lot of games.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Jed Lowry either, or Yoenis Cespedes if they can get anything out of them. So the offense should be quite good.
Yeah, all right. So who do you have for your World Series?
Oh, boy. Put me on the spot here. World Series, I'm going to go with Boston versus Washington. And Washington is going to take it.
Ah, so you stole my thunder. I've picked Washington to win the World Series for at least the last 4 years, maybe the last five. So I'm not going to stop now. I think it's going to be Washington and Houston, and Washington's going to win.
Why the hell are we both picking Washington?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just going with what I've always gone with Washington. But I like the youth that they got, and Soto and Robles, and hopefully Carter Kaboom at some point can crack into that lineup. And the pitching is still really good.
It is really good. It's just, you got to just believe that Washington's going to be able to get over the hump at one of these junctures. For the listeners out there, you probably don't know, but I lived in Washington, D.C. for 7 years before moving back up to my native state of Massachusetts. And I was down there for a lot of the painful playoff losses, and also was down there when you could literally buy the worst seat in the ballpark and go sit behind home plate because no one went to Washington Nationals games. This was pre-Harper and Strasburg. So the transformation there has been pretty amazing, and it just does seem like one of these years it's going to click. And I love the fact that with Harper leaving, they still decided to commit and add to the club. And, I mean, I don't think they're going to skip a beat.
Man, who was even on the Nationals pre-Harper and Strasburg?
Well, Zimmerman dude. Levon Hernandez, the immortal Levon Hernandez, was on some of those teams.
Wow.
Trying to think. Who else?
Ian Guzman. Desmond in his prime.
Yep.
Josh Bard.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Those were some pretty bad teams.
Tyler Clippard was their closer, right?
Yep. Clippard was on that team for a long time.
Oh, a young Jordan Zimmerman.
And wasn't Dimitri Young briefly on that team?
Adam Dunn.
Yep.
Elijah Dukes. Oh, man. These are some names.
Yep.
Niger Morgan, Lastings, Millage. Oh, man.
They had some painful teams to watch, to be honest. The biggest issue with the Nats when they were bad was the pitching. The pitching was just atrocious. They had some. They've always had some guys that were watchable in the field.
Yeah. All right. So, who do you have for your AL awards?
All right, AL awards. No shockers here. For MVP, Trout. For Cy Young, I have Chris Sale finally breaking through. I'm trusting the man that he's healthy. And he's got to do it at some point. He's got six straight years of top six finishes, so it's going to happen this year. And then my AL Rookie of the Year, I'm going to be boring about it and go with Vlad Jr. But Vlad is just so far and away the best prospect, so yep. He's going to mash.
I agree. I have Vlad as my Rookie of the Year, and I have Trout as my MVP. I went different than you on Cy Young, and I went with Trevor Bauer, who I could have potentially won it last year. Now he's added a changeup. I just think for as poopy as a person as he is, he's a pretty darn good pitcher, and he has a pretty decent chance at taking it home this year.
Love that pick. He's awesome. What do you have in the NL, Keats?
For NL, I went with Harper for my MVP. Actually, I guess I went with Nola for my Cy Young, so maybe I should have had Philly in the World Series. And then my Rookie of the Year, I went Chris Paddock.
Cowboy.
Yeah.
Nice. I like those picks. I went with a newly rich man, or extra rich man, as well. Nolan Arenado for my NL MVP. I went with Noah Syndergaard, driving that Mets team to success this year for the Cy Young. And I went with Victor Robles from the Nationals, playing some stellar defense, stealing a whole shitload of bases, and hitting for a high average in winning that NL Rookie of the Year.
That's a great pick. I waffled on him. I love him so much. And I mean, he's killing it in the spring training, which has been great to see. Like, literally doing hitting home runs, stealing bases, hitting almost 400. I just can't wait to see him do that on the field in regular season games.
They're going to have a great outfield.
Yeah,
so it's going to be awesome to watch.
Yeah. That's the show. Pod is finished. You can find myself on Twitter at The Spoken Keats. You can also find my writings at The Dynasty Guru, where today the next sequence in the Keaton Real series came out, which was my buying and selling spring training performances, which we kind of teased on the last pod, but I started to look into more of them and figured that it could actually be turned into an article, and so I did. So Jake, you can find him at DevJake. And what else do you have going on?
Got the Red Seat podcast over the Monster SB Nation podcast over there, and then launching on March 25th. Look for Locked On Red Sox, which is going to be your source for Red Sox news every day.
Excellent. You can find Patrick locked in a bathroom in Japan, or on Twitter at The Green Bagness. You can find our producer, Adam, at The Statcast Era. And that wraps it up for us. So have an awesome rest of the weekend, rest of the day, rest of the week, whenever you happen to be listening to this. And as always, be the best bird dog you can be.
Drive safe, people.